I'm Jason Hawk. He's Richard Smith, and she's Allison Downing. And this is Remote Patrol, where we're going to be talking about the X-Files for the next 15 weeks. I hope you guys are ready.
I am so ready for this.
15 whole weeks.
I'm so ready.
Commit,
now.
Allison. Commit to 15 weeks. Get on the party bus.
I'm so excited.
I'll be even older then.
I want to believe that you can do this with us, Allison. 15 is the magic number.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to do an X-Files show where we just watch every episode and then get together and go, that was amazing, wasn't
you
it?
You two fellas are all really welcome to do that.
I honestly don't know what we'd do in an X-Files show long term. I think this is the ideal way
to talk about it. Well, it's exciting again now because it's coming back, right?
Oh, it's coming back. Eight new episodes.
How excited are you two?
Very.
Stoked. Through the roof.
Very excited. And that's just coincidence. We were doing this episode before they announced that as well.
Yeah, but see, there's been this hunger growing inside of me for about the last 4 months. I've wanted to talk about X-Files. You fell into it. You stumbled into my honeyed trap, if that is not too sexual a metaphor.
There was a very, very long trail of honey, too.
No, really, I had not watched an episode of the X-Files for close to a decade, and there was something just these past few months, it was like clawing away at my insides. It was that uncomfortable feeling where you're trying to resist, you're trying to put it down, almost as though some mysterious beast, some dark force inside of me was responding to the alien signal to come out during the full moon and unleash the laser beams, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, but I have watched it through completely maybe 4 or 5 times in the last, since sort of Netflix came, maybe since the year before we got Netflix. It's almost an annual event for me over the last 6 or 7
and
years.
You know what? You do it on your own usually. I'm in the room, but I'm not watching.
Well, I know, because you're not fun, really.
I'm not.
See, I've been unwilling to do that myself because, I mean, I admitted this to you via email earlier in the week, Rich, but I went through a hugely, hugely embarrassing phase back in the 90s. From, you know, X-Files ran from 1993 to 2002. 1998, I was off for college, and by that time, I was kind of out of it. But like 95 to 98, that was a pretty sticky time.
It's quite odd that the X-Files...
to do with Gillian Anderson.
The X-Files runs just about from
sticky
beginning
time.
To want to have sex with somebody and actually achieving it.
Once you've done it, she's not so interesting anymore. Is that what you're saying?
What?
No, I'm not saying that. No. And it has nothing to do with Gillian Anderson, honestly. I don't find her to be that attractive.
Right. Richard, explain this while we were watching it.
I didn't notice anything about Gillian Anderson.
You liar, 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 pants on fire.
Was he reacting in an inappropriate manner?
He does this thing where he kind of goes quiet and his eyes drop, and then he gets very, very quiet and goes, I have to admit that when I was like in 1993, like she was like so hot and I, and it's not because she was so hot, it's just because she was a girl and she was a bit geeky and she was unthreatening, but also at the same time could kick ass when she needed to.
There's a show about aliens and I like aliens, and there's a girl on the show about aliens, so I like the girl that's on the show about the aliens.
Yeah.
I was 13. That was probably the year Rich finally got pubes. I don't know.
Aliens, girl, aliens, girl. And that was about it, really, wasn't it? But she didn't just mean that to you guys. I think she meant it to an entire generation of young men.
Oh, absolutely. She was an FHM Sexiest Woman of the Year.
I know!
I think she's pretty hot.
I don't see it.
Except now I'd have to say, let me just stop you. What the fuck is going on with your voice,
love?
Yeah,
why are you suddenly British like Madonna? Stop that off.
She's British now, did you know that?
Stop that off. Have you heard
Madonna has gained British citizenship?
No, she speaks in a British accent. Gillian Anderson speaks with a very British accent.
Well, she moved to England, didn't she?
Yes, but she's completely adopted this kind of accent, which is really quite disturbing when it's coming from her mouth.
But here's the thing. You know as well as I do that if you spend 15 minutes in another culture, your brain starts to parrot that other culture. It's just what your brain does. Your brain is mimetic.
But I don't want to hear it from other people who are professionally speaking. Do you know what I mean?
What is she going to do about her voice in the new episodes? She's going to have to Scully voice.
That voice, yeah. She's going to have to play Scully.
I don't get it. I don't believe it.
But if she played Scully before.
If that really happened to people, why did Dawn and Adrian not have American accents yet?
I don't know.
How long have they lived there?
Since 2006.
And not a trace
of it. No, they sound like they just come from Leeds and Nottingham combined.
Certainly some people are going to be more susceptible to it than other people. I mean, some people have addictive personalities and some don't. Some people have a very hard time walking away from the slot machine, and some people just, you know, roll their eyes and say, why would I want to go near the slot machines? So I'm guessing that there's something, you know, actors are trained to be chameleons. They're trained to look at something and copy it. And she started doing it subconsciously and then picked it up and said, hell, why not?
Well, these actors, especially one of such great talent as Gillian Anderson, we can't get inside their heads. We don't know what they go through dramatically. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think you're right.
But I think the point that you were making was that she's still fit, but she just talks with that voice, and that just takes the edge off her a bit.
I don't believe that she's not doing it on purpose. That is really the truth.
It's out there.
Yeah, I think, you know... You'd maybe go out for a meal. She'd do the British accent where people could see her. And then as soon as you got home, it's Scully all the way. I don't know.
That's just in fantasy land again.
Well, as long as we're taking her into fantasy land, that's a whole of the show and a different discussion.
I've got to say that I was probably more attracted, albeit not in a sexual way, in a totally hetero bro kind of way, to David Duchovny. I mean, when the X-Files came on, I was like, I want to be Mulder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those suits alone, man. That was one sharp-dressed FBI agent.
I wanted to have a name as cool as his. I mean, he's called Fox, for God's sake.
Yeah. But he doesn't let everybody call him Fox. That's his, like, pet name.
It's his mum. Calls him that, and not even Scully, except on like three occasions or something.
Mm. Massive spoilers. His sister at some point calls him Fox.
Yeah, that's true. Look, if you've not seen the X-Files by now, are we beyond spoilers now?
No, I don't think we are. Well, I think that when people listen to this, if they haven't already seen it, then hopefully they will have forgotten whatever you're going to spoil by the time they get around to it. Please do that, people.
It's a 20-year-old show.
Only temporarily hold on to what Richard's about to say.
Do that anyway, regardless of what show you're listening to. Oh, I absolutely do. That's the only way I stay remotely sane. If I hang on to this stuff, who knows what would happen. So we did two episodes for this episode of our show.
Mm.
And this is from... That guide that you found, Jason, was actually very good.
Well, it's the AV Club. The AV Club has a great track record. But, you know, I just Googled real quick to find out, you know, what are some of the best X-Files episodes, and the AV Club popped up. And, man, they just started off with real bangers. The first one, Season 1, Episode 8, it's probably the first really good episode of the X-Files. I mean, they were building up. They were getting better and better. They didn't really know what they were doing to start, but that's pretty much the case with every show. You know, they were trying to find their sea legs. And I think episode 8 is really where it killed.
It's a brilliant episode. Entitled Ice, for those of you playing along in the home version. But it's your classic.
Collaborate and listen.
I smack the bit. Come on, sorry, so Richard. Go on.
I'm not doing it again.
I hope that it's Mulder or Scully nightly.
It's a bottle episode. It's everybody stuck in the building. It's like
a bottle episode. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
It is. Yeah, it's a cross between The Thing and Ice Station Zebra and any other kind of remote. We're trapped in the Antarctic in a place that we can't get out of, and there's something hunting us.
Yeah.
And of course it's an alien thing. I was nearly going to say, and of course Mulder and Scully are all right. I'm going to say Scully and Mulder by the end of the night, by the way. That was me doing it on purpose. It's going to come out by accident the next time, just so we're all ready for that. I was going to say, of course they come out of it all right. But one of the great things about this show is, no, absolutely not is that, of course.
Mm.
It might have been early on, so arguably for episode 8, Yeah. But they've screwed around with us constantly on this show. Anything could have happened at any minute. And I mean, for God's sake, they got rid of the main character later on, but that's for another episode of this, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, the only thing that I want to say about that is that you know how I can't stand when a TV series ditches its main character and keeps going.
The problem is I liked Agent Doggett even more.
See, that's where I jumped out. Again, it's the whole Michael Scott thing. When Michael Scott left The Office, I was like, eh, I've invested so much in Michael Scott that now I feel like part of the show is empty. And Mulder was the X-Files. I know that Scully was there too. They were very much projected as being equals, but it was the Mulder show. It was all about David Duchovny.
Yeah.
And when he left, it was just, eh. It's like, you know, did you watch that 70s show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eric Foreman left. And you're like, well, he's the main character. What the hell is the show going to be about now?
Yeah, and we have Ashton Kutcher to thank for that. Or that to thank for Ashton Kutcher. Yeah. Now, I see what you mean. And to be honest, now I think about it, actually, by then I'd stopped watching it on TV.
Had you? For the same kind of reasons.
Well, actually, no, life kind of got in the way at that point.
You were at university, weren't you? It was 2000,
I was at university again. And I had other things to do. And I'd fallen into that trap of thinking, yeah, Mulder's not in it anymore. It was the Mulder show. I felt like you felt. But I ended up seeing a couple of episodes on VHS of the Robert Patrick ones and have since gone back to watch it. I think this is all still on DVD in the attic. I'm not sure. And loved them in hindsight. And then got to like Robert Patrick more than Mulder.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not 100% on David Duchovny as an actor.
Have you seen any of his body of work named The Red Shoe Diaries?
Alison, of course I've seen episodes of The Red Shoe Diaries. Again,
no, I have not.
He's not really in it.
He's in a couple of them. He's certainly in the first.
Well, the premise is it's kind of like softcore porn erotic fiction for network television. And
he's an
he narrates it. I think the premise is he finds a diary that is full of lots of stories, and each episode is him looking through one of these stories. So it begins and ends with a bit of narration from him, so you can put his name on it and people will watch it. But he doesn't actually act in it as a character or anything like that.
It just struck me really that it was an erotic kind of thing. And he had the least erotic voice in the universe.
Well, he talks like, you know,
can't really be bothered to talk, and he doesn't really reflect anywhere in his sentences.
You know, I have that problem, though, too. I have to really work to inflect anything at all. I feel like I'm so even all the time and dry. I understand Mulder's problem here. But as far as eroticism goes, he is something to aspire to. Have you seen Californication?
Yeah, the man's actually been... hasn't he had lots of problems with sex addiction and various other things like that?
Has he?
Yeah, I believe so.
Well, he has done porn.
Has he?
I didn't know he'd done porn.
I'm pretty sure that he has done porn. I'm going to have to look that up now. That sounds like a claim I'm making up on the spot.
I feel like if that had happened, I'd have heard of that.
But they even make a point of crossing that over a little bit into the X-Files, where Mulder has a porn fetish. I mean, that sounds redundant. That is redundant. Yeah. They make a point of showing him reading porn quite often.
Well, he's a single guy with a lot of stress. Did we all just get an alert? That sounded like I heard it through my headphones as well.
No, it was all just your stuff.
Okay. Oh, I did hear it through my headphones. It was on my computer. Sorry, every device I own just did an alert to remind me to do this show. I didn't tell them we were starting early. Were you looking something up, Alison? No, it was Jason who was looking something up. Sorry.
Oh. 10 Hollywood stars who started their careers in porn. Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
Oh, this is one of those stupid click through 10 pages to get 10 things.
It really is, and I'm trying to find it. Like any actor or celebrity, David began his career on the bottom by acting in numerous commercials in the late 80s. He crossed over. Yeah, I don't see the word porn anywhere in his bio.
I don't think it's the whole
David back. Appeared in an episode of the soft porn series, The Red Shoe Diaries. I don't know. This is so poorly written, I can't tell if they're talking about The Red Shoe Diaries or not. Oh, internet journalism, calling yourself journalism.
I don't think that Red Shoe Diaries can be anywhere classed as porn.
Really terrible, terrible porn.
And certainly not with him as a star in it, you know.
But yeah, the man's a famous getting his end away kind of guy. Like Billy Bob Thornton.
He's certainly been to a rehab, which no doubt took lots of money off him. To talk about why he destructively has so much dangerous sex.
Dangerous sex.
That sounds like a TV show right there. It sounds like a Showtime series.
I would watch that show. I would
Dangerous
watch that
sex. What would they do though? Like,
hang on, isn't that actually a show?
When you're talking about dangerous sex with sex addicts, it just means like getting caught, having sex with people who are risky in all kinds of ways.
No, I'm sorry, that doesn't do it for me. I want them to have sex on a high wire.
Well,
or
you know, that kind
a
of
barrel
thing.
Going over Niagara Falls.
Possibly.
I'm imagining some sort of elaborate machine of, if you're not done by this time, then this lever will fall, and then the bowling ball will start rolling around the room, and that will eventually startle this pigeon sat on that shelf. That's dangerous sex. I'm thinking of, is that Sex in the ER, that one that was on TLC? Yeah, that was just...
Sex with a bear trap. That's dangerous.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Did you know, in the early years of the series, Mulder is a firm believer in extraterrestrials and Scully is a skeptic, but the opposite is true for the actors who portray them.
Oh, I thought you were just going to cut off saying, did you know that one of them thinks aliens exist? Did you know that?
Yeah. But where are we all on that, by the way? Just
as far as believing, are we believers?
Yeah.
Well, that they've been here, that they come here.
Well,
that,
I don't know. I think there's a lot of facets to it.
No.
Extraterrestrial life existing and extraterrestrial life visiting Earth are two very, very different
things.
Because we know that they have existed in the past. We found single-celled organisms on the surface of Mars. You know, there's no doubt if you play the rule of averages, if you play the statistics game, that given a vast and ever expanding universe, that there is life somewhere else. I mean, it's just probability.
That's all the right answer, everybody. Good. That's good.
But as far as developing some sort of faster than light drive that allows them to buzz the Earth in attempts to, I don't know, pick up cows or try to figure out how people's teeth work. I mean, when you read these UFO abduction stories, they really are ridiculous as far as what the aliens want. That's kind of the tip-off that they're not true, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. Like, why do they want to do anything here? We must be so boring on a galactic level.
What I don't like is the assumption that there's no attempt to communicate before they take stuff from us. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, hyper-intelligent... Yeah. Starfaring creatures who can't figure out how to say, hey,
can I have a look at your liver? Do you mind? I can see this thing here. I think it's, I'd like to have a look at your liver. Would you mind?
Instead of taking it out, I'll just x-ray it.
Yeah, and instead of just like shining lights and stabbing them with lasers and.
But what if it's the government? What if it's the government?
Oh, gosh.
What if it's not, though, is it?
It's really not, no.
And
I think, you know, sometimes things that have been seen as UFOs or alien craft have been genuine military operations.
Oh, there have been times when that was
they've
true.
Let the people who've been shouting, there's aliens. They've kind of like, yeah, there's aliens. Don't look over here. They were definitely aliens. It wasn't our new technology that no one's ever seen.
Like the dude they sent mad. That's a whole other...
You see, I think that's feasible.
That was quite cool, actually.
I think that's feasible, but I mean, to me, X-Files is pure fantasy. Pure fantasy.
Now, it's not all aliens, though.
No, I know.
And I
there's
I
quite
also
a lot
like
of disturbed
that...
psychological individuals. No, I've spent a lot of time with people with mental health problems.
Hang on, wait. Where are you going to with this? Because I'm talking about the episodes that are just monsters.
Oh, right. I went to the...
I'm not looking for explanations of UFO sightings. I meant X-Files episodes.
No, I meant, there's quite a lot of episodes where we've got somebody who looks like they've got a psychosis.
But they're an alien usually. Or possessed by a worm, as in the episode Ice. I didn't intentionally drag us back there, but I feel good that it happened.
You see, you guys have got such a different relationship with the show than I have. I wasn't in love with Gillian Anderson. She wasn't a possibility. I thought she was a frump and a boring girl who I'd ignore at school.
Exactly. Then she might be the girl that talks to me.
I was 20 years old by this point. David Duchovny was not attractive or exciting to me either.
Yeah.
And Aliens, really? Aliens were stupid at this point. This whole notion that they were here and doing stuff was stupid to me. So I kind of went through this period of time just going, yeah, whatever, Sex Files, whatever.
You can't have been quite that old because you're not 7 years older than me.
I was born in 1973.
So old.
I know, right?
It is, isn't it?
Oh my God, you're ancient.
I know.
You know, I think that a lot of people were in your spot, though, where they just saw The X-Files and they're like, oh, it's another one of those shows. It's another Star Wars. You know, people who don't know sci-fi, they lump everything into these categories where they don't try it first. So they just say, oh, everything sci-fi is Star Trek. Oh, everything sci-fi is that Star Wars thing. And so I think that a lot of people who would really, really enjoy The X-Files just avoided it out of habit. Now, on that point, I told you I went on a complete X-Files trip after we decided to watch it. And so I just started railroading him. You know, I just started shotgunning him straight through. I went crazy. It was great. But I found out that Lisa, my lovely wife, whom I love very much, mm-hmm. was just not leaving the living room. She wasn't going anywhere. She was sitting there on the couch and she had her laptop and she was pretending very, very hard to be working, to be typing. And then the typing would slow down a little bit. The typing would slow down a little bit more. I'd look over and be very quiet. And I'd see, oh my God, she's watching The X-Files. And I was amazed.
Yeah. She was.
And then, okay, so we'll get to it in a little while. But the, you know, maybe we should save Dwayne Barry for next week. Because I think that we have enough to say for an hour and a half without getting to Dwayne Barry. That's a big episode.
Mm.
But we were watching that one, and that was the first two-parter in The X-Files, too. So we were watching the follow-up one. But that, I'm pretty sure it's that one, that you finally see that Fox's sister, Samantha, was abducted by aliens when he was a little kid, or at least that's what Fox thinks. You don't know at that point in the series. It hasn't been revealed. But it shows her bathed in the red light, floating up off the bed and floating out the window. You know that big iconic scene?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm sitting there and I'm kind of looking at Lisa out of the corner of my eye and she stands up and she goes, they took his sister? I said, yeah. She's like, but did I get the sister back? I said, well, that's kind of, you know, the central point of the show. And from there on, Lisa was just hooked. She's like, well, they got the sister back, right? Really, yeah. Watch some more if you want.
See, I'm surprised that someone... No, doesn't know that that's what happens in The X-Files.
I think there's a lot of people who don't know what The X-Files is. As a matter of fact, I remember back when I was a teen, I thought that it was kind of like, you know, like Unsolved Mysteries or something like that at first.
Yeah.
Because I mean, full admission, I didn't get into it in 93. I didn't see it on its first run. I only got into it when FX started showing the reruns. It was like late in 94 or early in 95. That every night at 8 o'clock, all of a sudden, you know, they chain 3 or 4 X-Files episodes together, which, you know, that's how I've learned how to view things now with Netflix. So it was really nice to be able to have them bam, 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 get a whole bunch in a row. And then especially once it got into those, you know, the UFO abduction type episodes where they start spelling out what the grand conspiracy is. It was great to be able to watch them back to back to back and kind of get the quick reveal.
Mm-hmm.
But, I didn't watch it at first because I had total preconceptions about what it was.
I'm going to have to watch them all through again now, I think. Yeah, it's time.
Is it time? Is it about a run through time?
It is.
I might pay more attention this time.
And I'll mix it in because I'm currently watching The Outer Limits for Ray Guns and Go-Go Boots. So I'm going to... I think that's a nice little mix of shows there.
Yeah. Especially
stir the pot there.
Juxtaposed with the other thing that we're shotgunning at the minute.
Yeah. Fortitude. Have you heard of that one, Jason?
What's Fortitude?
It's kind of... Right? It's set in a... In the Arctic Circle, in a little town called Fortitude.
In
and
northern... It's basically... Norwegian Arctic.
It kind of starts off like it's going to be a big murder mystery in the kind of... I don't know. Almost like a lengthier Prime Suspect. But as things go on, it's getting weirder and you're starting to realize it's actually much more X-Files than Prime Suspect. And it's about things in the ice.
It's dark. And because, you know, we're in the Northern Arctic, it is dark for a lot of time. And it's a period of darkness that we're there with this story. And it's all a bit odd and creepy and weird. And, you know, it's like this outpost at the end of the world where people have gone to escape who they were and have no past, that kind of a place.
You know, there was really an independent movie that came out a few years back, and I can't remember. I think it was set in Sweden, but it was called Troll Hunter. That it sounds like there might be some spiritual connection there. Did you see Troll Hunter?
Yeah, it's not like that.
Okay.
I still don't know quite where it's going with
what the explanation is.
We still don't know. It's just weird right now.
I like the idea of Prime Suspect crossed with something creepy.
I think you'll like this. It's got some grim bits in it, though.
Because, like I said, it starts out and you think, oh, this is a murder mystery. It's all going to be about who did the killing thing. And not about that at all.
Not even begin to tell the story. It's really good.
I figured it might be showing over there. It's a Sky production. It's actually being made here.
Does it use the procedural format?
No.
Not really, because everybody's working sort of for themselves.
It's much more general drama, but I think you'd like it. I think you might. It's got Stanley Tucci, and he's being awesome in it.
He's amazing in it.
Well, Stanley Tucci is just amazing in everything he's in.
And who else? Michael Gambon and Christopher Eccleston for half an hour.
And wow, that is a stacked cast right there.
It's really good.
He spent some money on it. And apparently Sky became the world's largest buyer of fake snow during the production.
They shot all the outdoor scenes in Eastern Iceland.
And had no snow.
Had to buy snow in.
What do you mean you've got to buy snow? You're in Iceland.
There's snow on the mountain. Why is there no snow on the road?
But you know the whole thing about Iceland, Greenland, right? I mean, the names are transposed. Iceland is the one that's a little bit greener, and Greenland is the one that's all in ice.
Very true. I mean, they've got a mountain behind the village, which is definitely covered in snow, and it is Arctic winter, so there's the darkness. So there is more snow than there would be at any other time, but there's no snow on the roads and outside the houses, and there's stories about frostbite and things like that that have to be created.
You know, my memory played a little bit of a trick on me, speaking of procedural things. I was kind of surprised how little procedural stuff there is in the X-Files, at least the episodes that I've happened to watch so far. And I've gone through eight or nine of them in the first two seasons so far.
How do you mean then? Because I would have said it's still quite, it's as procedural as they could make it.
Well, they do use things like microscopes and they do collect evidence and you hear them talking about forensic pathology and all that sort of thing throughout the X-Files. But unlike something like CSI, those aren't really the clues that lead to the next thing. Like CSI unfolds, okay, now we've got to get this next piece of evidence. Now we've got to go to the lab for the next piece of evidence. Now we have to make sure that these two clues match up. And they go through it procedurally.
Right, yeah.
But the X-Files uses the veneer of science over all that kind of thing. And then just, you know, Mulder makes a leap and says, oh, it's aliens. Let's go get the aliens.
The science is very good for discovering that Mulder's just gotten into danger. I think it was the Dwayne Barry episode where he's already walked into the building as the calls come from Scully saying, yeah, he's in so much danger. Don't let him go in the building. Oh, he's just walked into the building. Oh, that's every week. If you'd just phoned 45 seconds earlier, the whole episode would have been scuppered.
It all sort of rests on that nice juxtaposition between these two very different people who come at the job with very different agendas and personal beliefs.
Do you know? Yeah, but I don't think they're all that different. I think what you've just said is right, that they come at it from very different with different beliefs and different agendas. But in terms of the people that they are, I think they're actually quite similar. They're both very...
They've got different propensities. Mulder's propensity is to believe that it is an alien or monster of the week or whatever. And it's Scully's propensity to say there's a scientific fucking reason why this is happening that's got nothing to do with...
Yeah, they're both... They both have X-file. A different belief, but they're both as stuck in it as the other person is.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Even
he ends up being right.
After Scully has been directly given evidence, like undeniable, irrefutable evidence that aliens exist, she's still like, yeah, but we got to explain them through science. So now let's go back and kind of put the clues together and figure they're not mystical aliens. So let's try to get some of their blood and try to see if we can DNA type them.
Yeah.
But you know what? We're a half an hour into this podcast, and I feel like I want to try to get as many people on board with the X-Files as possible. Which, if you've survived 30 minutes into this podcast and you downloaded a podcast that had X-Files in the title, then you probably are already bought in. But still, I feel like we should spell out the exact premise of the show.
I think you're right. Huh. I think you're right. Let's go back to basics.
It's the FBI, right?
Yeah. These two...
Scully and Mulder work for the FBI.
In how big a unit, though?
A unit of two people.
And a boss.
Well, someone's got to be in charge of them.
Yeah.
But you've got the X-Files, which are the files from the FBI of cases that can't be explained. Not unsolved cases, necessarily. Just the weird shit. And
wait, is that really why they're called the X-Files? Because they can't be explained?
Yeah.
Probably.
Because I always just thought, hey, it's the 90s and we put X on front of anything to make it look cool. Gen X. X Games. Yeah. Pepsi X.
We did do that, didn't we? I
really
never noticed
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah, you're
X
right.
X was like, hey, it's the cutting edge thing.
And we like the word Max as well at the same time because that also has the X in it.
Is there an X Max thing? That seems to ring a bell now.
X Max. This X Lax, which is a laxative
there
brand.
Is. That is a very different thing.
It's quite explosive.
Yeah.
My son's name is Max and he is maximum something. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with
that. He's Max to the Max.
He could have somehow just scraped in his middle name being something like Overdrive.
Look, I really tried to get his name to be Charles Xavier Hawk.
Did you?
It was going that direction, and then Lisa Googled it, and my plan was screwed.
Oh, fuck.
Because I was going to call him Xavier. That's what we were going to do, but it was going to be Charles Xavier, and I was going to be like, she can't catch on to that. It's the X-Men.
Yeah, but then you just put the wrong movie on one day without thinking about it, and suddenly you die the next night in your sleep.
There was very, very nearly some physical violence that happened out of my attempted bid for Charles Xavier to begin with.
You still got the X in there, though, so good work, man. Good work.
Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, the X-Files. Thank you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut that far into the... Yeah,
that is why they're the X-Files. No, they are the... Don't know what the...
Unexplained.
This is the unexplained X-Files, right? And just Mulder is working on these because no one cares. It's weird stuff that no one really believes in except him. And he's an outcast. He's the freak of the FBI. And his office is just him in the basement. And one guy in charge of him occasionally saying, stop it. And all that. And so they assign Dana Scully to him as a scientist to discredit him and his work and embarrass him. And it doesn't quite go that way, really. And then we get 9 seasons of awesome television. It starts out with her just being completely skeptical about everything and not impressed by him, and their relationship grows. They get closer and closer. There was a little bit of a will-they-won't-they kind of thing.
A little bit?
A lot of
well,
it.
Well, and, you know, that eventually becomes much more important, and that's it's not will-they-won't-they in the... Ross and Rachel kind of way.
No, it was are they, aren't they?
Yeah.
It was Are they screwing off screen? Is that what's happening? Because there were hints. I mean, they were very, very familiar with each other.
Yeah.
But if he's that kind of fella,
maybe
you don't know. It just leaks out of him. It probably does.
And I don't explicitly remember, but very late in the game, perhaps after I had tuned out, after I went to college, did they actually hook up on the show?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like for more than just a one night stand?
Yeah, no, as of the final movie, they are very much a couple. So I expect we'll see more of this in the new episodes. One would hope, otherwise that really fucks up the continuity in a few cases. So, they eventually do. And you kind of expect them to, because unlike the comedy Ross and Rachel, they are the only two people that they ever come into contact with. They don't have any friends. They don't go on dates with people they've met. They just see each other 24 hours a day.
They don't have a life, do they?
So if either of them want a relationship, they inevitably have to have it with each other. And so I think that eventually... Plus, you know, you spend 10 years with someone, they eventually wear you down, don't they? I don't know. Have I worn you down yet, Alison?
No, not really.
Not through lack of trying.
Now, you started to get into it a little bit earlier, Rich, that there are two kinds of episodes, and we've talked about aliens an awful lot, but then there's the Monster of the Week stuff. They go after the Jersey Devil. They go after El Chupacabra. They go after Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monsters and kids who have electric powers coming out of their fingertips and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice mix of episodes. Is there a point where maybe the Monster of the Week episodes get a bit much? And they're just a bit silly sometimes.
Well, sometimes they use them as comic relief to kind of scale things down. You know how in a horror movie or a slasher movie you have three or four kills and then the bad guy or the monster makes a joke and then relieves the tension so that it can ramp back up so that the scares can keep coming?
Yeah. And so you bring in a Monster of the Week one.
They have the individual episodic kind of format going, and then they have the overarching conspiracy plot that weaves its way through the entire run of the series. And I think that the whole purpose of the Monster of the Week ones is to kind of ratchet it down between the conspiracy episodes so that when you get back to the conspiracy episodes, there's more at stake.
That makes sense to me. I can go along with that. I think it's a nice mix. And it gives them the opportunity to do some of them aren't as serious as others. You know,
some of them are straight up comedy episodes.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah. Some of them are just silly.
Perhaps the best episode of The X-Files is a comedy episode. My favorite personal one is Jose Chung's From Outer Space.
Which is that one?
It comes a little bit later. I think it's like season 5. But it's the one where it's all told from the perspective of a sci-fi author. Who's going back and he's writing a book about Skulder and Molly. See, I beat you to it. I screwed it up first. He's interviewing people, including Mulder and Scully, who have talked, who've gone through this alien encounter, through this UFO encounter, this supposed government cover-up of a UFO crash. And he's finding that everybody remembers it incredibly different. And it plays out really hilarious because, it paints this total caricature of Mulder's dopiness. You know, it gets him, different people see him as being like really hard, like kind of a diehard character. And other people see him as being like incredibly monotone and not really doing anything. And the details of the story change with every person that he interviews.
I remember the one. Yes.
It's a good episode.
They're all good episodes. There's not... You know, it's another
bad episodes.
I honestly think it's just one of those shows where I'm happy at any point to watch any of them. Yeah, there are ones that are better than others, but none of them offend me. None of them are turn this off, it's horrible, bad. Because they're all the X-Files. It's like Star Trek. Mm. Yes, some are better than others, but I'm going to watch them all.
Yeah.
More than once.
God, I wish I could get as infected as you guys.
I don't know how you don't.
I think it really has to do with exactly what you were saying, Allison. It's the time and the place where you were in your life when the X-Files came on. Because for me, every time I hear that theme song, that awesome theme song, it's all of a sudden 1995 again. And 1995 and 6 were really good years for me.
They sucked for me. I'll be honest.
Well, again, you were doing grown-up things then.
I was doing pretendy grown-up things that didn't involve X-Files.
We were playing out on bikes and started bath time and stuff. Yeah.
A couple of grim years there, I think, for me personally, but 95, 96.
It's a shame you didn't
get started to
get.
I'd got a really, really good job by that point as well, so I was throwing myself into that and there a lot.
Right. See, by 95, 96.
And when I wasn't there, I was partying hard.
Yeah, I was just doing my GCSEs and longing for the day when I'd be old enough to drive a car.
And, you know, what you were saying about the, you know, lumping it in with other sci-fi, I didn't do that because I already loved Star Trek.
That's true.
That point. And Star Trek is not stupid to me. It's fucking hopeful. And I really fucking hope it's true, you know? And I don't get that about X-Files. It falls into the silly category for me. Ever so slightly.
Look, if you look at it in a contextual kind of frame, compared to other shows that were on at the time, it was completely different from what else was on the air.
It
was dark. I mean, shadows all the time. The lighting was always red and yellow and blue spilling in from another doorway. And you didn't know what was going on. And it was spelling things out for you very slowly. And you got to go on this journey and kind of piece together the clues. And is it aliens? Are they not aliens? Is there a conspiracy? Is there not a conspiracy? Hey, that cigarette smoking guy keeps on popping up. Who is he? Who is he?
Yeah.
It was all good. It was amazing.
Yeah, I was partying hard.
I know you were worried about us not liking this show as much as you do, Jason, but I am totally on board with you.
I can feel it. Yeah. I bet your vibe, brother. It's just Allison. I'm not sure that we're going to allow her on next week.
Oh, gosh.
You can't, no, but she's doing well.
No, I'm going to be here. Do you know what? What you were saying then just about the colours and stuff like that, that is one thing I am really appreciating. And you said, Richard, this could really do with a Blu-ray
update. Oh, it's begging for a
It really needs
redo.
High def.
And
there was one particular shot in ICE where they're going to their quarters for the first time. And this corridor is lit so beautifully, bright red down one side with like highlights of white, and they're both in the white section while there's just all this redness bleeding behind them. It's a wonderful shot, so good. And I don't know who did the fucking location choosing, but that corridor is one of the best corridors ever.
It really is. There's
really
some great
good
shots
shot.
In it. It's
really great shot.
Shot,
really beautiful photography.
Now, Jason, I might have asked you this before. Have you ever seen Fringe?
I watched the first season of Fringe, and I thought it was okay, but I thought it was going to get canceled, so I refused to get invested in it further. I liked what I saw, but I think that where you're probably angling is it was a total X-Files ripoff.
Not so much. I actually didn't see it as a ripoff. I saw it more as a carried on where X-Files sort of left off in a TV, in that same kind of show space. You know, it was kind of it wasn't, I didn't think it was an X-Files straight ripoff, but it did have those same elements that I enjoyed. It kind of is a bit of an X-Files ripoff the more I think about it now, but I did enjoy it.
You get female Mulder trying to stop the government conspiracy. Yeah, I get where you're going from. The only thing about that show that really turned me off ever so slightly was the inclusion of Pacey from Dawson's Creek, because I just couldn't see him as anything other than Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
He was actually really good.
He was. Allison, I'm picking up every breath for some reason. I don't know what's just moved.
No, I don't either.
Okay. Sorry.
You know what? We really need to talk about ICE. We promised people that we would talk about ICE.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the brilliant opening scene anyway. it's something we've seen before in kind of sci-fi. Is the guy making a last-ditch message to the outside world that something bad's getting us.
Yeah.
And we're not who we think we are. We're not us anymore. And he's got slashes across his chest in a rather geometric pattern, I thought. And there's another guy there as well, and he's a bit crazy and wild, and also covered in bruises and stuff. And they've both got guns. And I really, really loved that scene where they were both fighting each other and got to the point where they were both barrel to barrel and then slowly lifted their guns up to their own heads to end it all. And that he'd said a line before, "It ends here and now." And Scully says it later on. I quite like that. It was good. It was exciting.
Right from the very first second of that cold open, you get that it's the Thing. Because the first thing that you see is the dog. And it might as well be the exact dog from the Thing. Because he's drifting through the ice base. And there are dead people all around. And you're like, okay, I know that this is very reminiscent of something. Oh my God, it's the Thing.
Yeah, very much like the Thing. The whole thing feels like the Thing. It's cold. There's bunkers. It's clearly a matte painting with some snow film put across the front of it. And it's spooky. It's dark. It's Arctic darkness again.
Do you know what? This is an X-Files. This is a television version of a cover song. Right?
Yeah, I like that.
But and I'll explain what I mean. I think you've got it. There is nothing in this you haven't seen before. There's a thing loose at the Arctic Research Station. Even like you say, it's the classic we've seen in sci-fi: man talking to a video camera. We're all dead except me, and I'm going to be killed hideously in front of the camera in a minute.
So and all Star that Trek. Stuff.
We've seen every bit of it, but this is the X-Files version of that thing. In this, you know, in the same way, there are lots of songs that are just cover versions. We know the song, but this is that band, that performance version of that song.
Mm.
And that's what ICE is.
This is Wrath of Khan as well.
There is a little bit of a Wrath of Khan moment with a bug in an ear.
Yeah.
That's very true.
And you can just see the writers, you know, it was, well, Chris Carter gets a credit, but Glenn Morgan is the main writer for this episode, and he would go on to do some of the absolute best ones. James Wong is the other co-writer. And again, these are the guys that if you want the really good episodes of The X-Files, this is where you go. But you can see him sitting down and being like, okay, we want to do the paranoia story. We want to do the story where you don't know who it is that's been tainted or corrupted by whatever influence, you know, who's possessed by the ghost, who's inhabited by the shape-shifting alien, who is gone mad, who's the secret killer. That's the story, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I'm suffering 20 years of amnesia. I can't remember how some of these X-Files episodes end. I remember classic moments.
Yeah.
But I could not for the life of me remember who in this show was going to be the one that was infected with the alien bug.
Yeah. I had no idea. I think this amnesia, this 20-year amnesia is an amazing thing because it just means that everything's new.
Yeah.
Again, you know, nothing's old.
Except for the excitement. No, you have that lingering trace amount of, oh, I remember something's going to happen. They're going to go. What the hell happens when they go around the corner? Mm. You know that the jump scare is coming and you can appreciate it all that much more when it does.
Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed this episode. Didn't remember a thing about it. And like I say, I watch these quite often. There's always a time of, or just sticking X-Files on. And you don't even look on the menu on X-Flix, on Netflix. X-Flix.
X-Flix.
That's a different
it
service.
It is X-Flix. Because it's cool.
You know, where you just get to the first picture of it on the thing and you just press play, knowing it's going to play just the next episode from the one you were watching. Because it doesn't matter. The X-Files, they're all good. And this one was no exception. But yeah, like you say, just no surprises now. If you've seen enough television, you've seen every frame of this episode. I'm stunned it took three of them to write it. If it took them more than three quarters of an hour, they were pissing about.
They did some things very, very well, though, including, I mean, again, I didn't know who the infected person was. Mm. But more to the point, I didn't know if it could possibly be Mulder.
Did you like the moment of logic when they both had guns drawn at each other and they both just threw out the logic guns and went, it could be you, it could be me. Oh my God, it could be me. Okay,
I loved that.
That was a great moment. Really well done and well acted between the pair of them as well. Thought it was good.
And there was a few recognisable people in it. We had Xander Berkeley, who's Jack Bauer's ex-boss.
Yeah.
For a bit. That woman.
See, I didn't know him as that, but he's kind of really famous in DC circles when it comes to the DC animated universe, like the Justice League cartoon and some, a lot of the one-offs.
Oh, yeah. Did I see his name on a lot of Batman things?
He does a ton of DC cartoon voiceover work.
Right. He's just one of those guys who has been on so many shows. Looking on his IMDb, was it 221 acting credits? Whoever I'm speaking to right now, you have seen him in something. If you have seen television in the last 20 years, you've seen this guy. The woman was from Desperate Housewives, wasn't she?
Felicity Huffman. Yeah, she forgot her name. She's an Academy Award winner, Felicity Huffman.
I don't know her enough. What, really? What did she win an Academy Award for?
I believe she won Best Actress for Transamerica.
No.
I'm almost positive.
None of those words mean anything to me.
Transamerica was a 2005 film, about someone who switched genders, switched sexes. I'm not sure which is the correct word there. But I'm pulling up her IMDb and her Wikipedia. Let's see.
That means nothing to me. I thought she was just in Desperate Housewives. And
She was nominated once for an Academy Award for Transamerica. 5 times for a Golden Globe, winning 1. Has also won an Emmy, Obie, and 3 SAG Awards.
Fair enough.
Huffman drew critical praise for her performance as a transgender woman in the independent film Transamerica 2005.
Fair enough. I had no idea.
She did a good screaming, didn't she?
She did. I think this was a very early role for her as well.
She did a good wild moment. That was really good as well, that whole trick where they managed to get Scully locked in a room and she was trying to batter her way out of a metal door with a drill bit. That was good. And I still didn't know. I still didn't know up until the moment, which was perfect. Really well done.
I don't want to spoil it. Do you think we should spoil it?
No, I don't think we should, you know. Let's not say it. Yeah.
It's all on Netflix. Go and watch it on Netflix. If you're in America or naughty like us.
Also in this episode was Steve Heitner. Who you're going to recognize as Banya from Seinfeld?
Yes, I did.
Gold, Jerry Gold.
And the other guy, Jeff Koba? I'm going with Koba.
Yeah, Steven Tyler.
Yeah, who I kind of recognized. And again, 111 acting credits. So again, if you've seen television in the last 20 years, you've seen him in something.
He's been in a lot of horror movies and... He was in a movie that makes me shiver to this day. Tank Girl.
Oh,
it's a comic
yeah.
book
Good
movie.
God.
It's that claustrophobic scene, and I've talked about this before, where they put her into this this pipe that gets narrower the further it goes down, but she's put in head first with her feet sticking up in the air, and she, you know, every breath she takes, she goes further down into the pipe. That really kicked off my claustrophobia.
God, I bet. You know, I've never actually seen Tank Girl.
Don't waste your time.
That was the impression I got.
Yeah, really don't.
That was the impression I got. I was going to say.
But Jeff Cobra's in it.
and lots of other things. He's got one of those faces that just says, put me in a horror movie, please.
He was the pilot in this, and he was the weak link, don't you think?
Well, yeah, but they got rid of him pretty quick, so it was okay. It was his job to freak out and be the first one to die.
Yeah, and to do it transparently, too.
Yeah.
Hey guys, what if somebody got infected by this alien thing? Not me, but I'm not saying I'm infected already.
But what if? And you've got to have that as well, dramatically, haven't you? You've got to have you can't just say, this is going to kill us all. We need to have seen it kill someone. And we need to know exactly.
Yeah, you've got to have the blood sacrifice.
Exactly, and that's all he was there for. He may as well have had a red shirt on.
Very true.
And that's all he was. He was a point of drama. I don't know. I thought he was okay. I mean, the rest of the episode, it's basically the thing. Let's be honest. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's just that's it. And it's not the last time the X-Files will do an episode like that either. I'm reminded of one on a volcano, I think, with something that's come up from the volcano that kills humans or something. There's a few of them. But again, they're all just like cover songs. And they're all good.
Well, think about how many different mythologies that can relate back to. I mean, werewolves are pretty much the same thing. Which one of us is the werewolf? Who's going to transform? Or, who in this room is the vampire?
Exactly.
It's another way to prey on the unknown.
Mm.
But it's a good one. And I always like the one where they do it in the, you might be you and you don't know.
It might be you.
That's
clever, that bit.
Yes. Really liked that about this episode. Because, you know, as much as we don't know if it's Mulder or Scully, Mulder and Scully don't know if it's Mulder or Scully either.
Exactly.
That's pretty special.
Although I think when you're down to like five people or four people, it's all right to say, look, we're going to work on the basis that if you're going to kick off about being tested, then it's probably you. Right? That moral outrage works on a national level. But with five people locked in a room, not so much. We all need to be tested, and that's all there is to it. And if you won't do it, we'll cave your head in. So, yeah, they should have known right away when that pilot wouldn't get tested. Of course that's him. Of course it is. People, once again, with that problem of people on television have never seen enough television.
There's the compounded problem of the bug, once it gets into your system, once it takes over, it makes you incredibly aggressive and irritating. But they're already in an aggressive and irritating situation.
That's part of the genius of it.
Right, but if you don't want to be tested, I mean, that's just part of being in a bad spot. I mean, everybody there is scared. You don't want anyone to come near you because they could be infected. And so naturally, everybody's going to be tense, and the bug's just preying on that, and it's exacerbating that. Look, how do you tell what is human nature and what is the bug?
You can make this argument all you want. If we're ever trapped in a room testing for bugs, Jason, we're testing you, and you don't get to reference this and say, this is why not. You know, it's just how it's going to go. If I have to hold you down, we're testing.
I don't know, Smith. I don't want you coming near me with a knife or a needle or anything. You could be infected.
I totally appreciate that. I wouldn't want me coming near me with a knife or a needle or anything either. Unfortunately, we're in the Arctic. This is way out of hand. It's fine. It's fine. We don't have to go through this, really. At least
it is a good episode, and like I said, it doesn't play out predictably, but it does kind of proceed predictably. You know what's going to happen, and
yeah,
that's the only reason why I wouldn't say, like, look, this is one of the best episodes of the X-Files.
But if you're going to only watch one from season one, it's a good one to watch.
I think, yeah, if you put it into the season one pool, then definitely it's way up at the top.
See, I'm a little uneager to say don't watch the very first one of something. You know, even when we're talking about, you know, I think we've done it with the Next Generation as well, even though season one of Next Gen is universally awful, you should watch the first one. You need to see the setup of Scully meeting Mulder for the first time, don't you? If you've never seen any X-Files,
yeah,
you want to get that, and that's only in episode one, so you've got to see that. I think that the thing is, don't just watch one episode per season. Watch some more. Life's short, but it's not too short to watch the X-Files.
You know, Lisa asked a very similar question to the vein that you're going down, which is, she was asking me about the podcast itself. She was like, so you guys just, you watch them straight through, or are you watching the first one? Because I put in season one, episode 8, Ice, first, and that just threw her off. She's like, why are you watching this one? And I suppose there's something to be said for watching the pilot with the shows that we tackle, but I don't want it to turn into okay, so here's the first one, and they don't really know what they're doing, and this isn't really representative of what happens in season three.
I think you're right.
They're weak here, and oh, they haven't figured this character out yet. Oh, they totally retcon that in season two.
If we start watching whole seasons of shows, it moves us dangerously close to Ray Guns and Go-Go Boots on the show schedule sort of thing.
Yeah, it's tricky. And then we hardly see any shows. Yeah,
we have to do it this way.
Yeah.
And as much as I want to watch every single episode of X-Files, and as much as I have been trying to shoot through them, it's just not going to happen. No. With the three kids, do you have any idea how many late nights I have pulled just to make an extra X-Files episode happen in the past week?
Oh, quite a few. Three. Yeah, three.
I'm cruising on like three straight nights of 5 hours of sleep, and I feel like crap. Oh.
Feeling you, brother. Long distance high five. I got 3 hours last night.
For the aliens to come down in the UFO and Mulder to go, see, I told you.
Hang on. Exactly. Sorry. I'm pressing the 30-second rewind button on this podcast. Jason got 5 hours of sleep because he has three children. You got 3 hours of sleep because you've got Civilization 5.
I also only have a 12-hour break. I have a 12-hour break between finishing work and starting work.
That is very true.
An hour and a half of that was taken up by traveling. About an hour of that was taken up by eating. And then watched Fortitude all night. No.
Again, by choice, as intelligent
but that's
adults.
What, you know, Jason was pushing 5 hours because of X-Files. I was pushing 3 hours because of Fortitude.
Yeah, that's...
You know, if X-Files were rated G, it would be one thing. But the problem is I can't put it on until after the kids are in bed. No. You can't expose kids to this.
No, it's too scary.
Can you imagine if you had started watching the X-Files when you were like six?
God, freaked out.
You would be every shadow.
I'd never sleep.
It would just be terrifying.
Richard, you would have never slept in your entire life. You would have died of no sleep by the age of about nine.
I don't know kids as well as you do, Jason.
You know yourself as a child.
I wouldn't show this to... I'd be uncomfortable with any kid preteen seeing this, I think. And even then, like, 14, 15, maybe. I don't know, because it came out in 93. I was 13, and I watched it when it first came on, and I turned out TV. So... It's all okay.
You turned out TV?
Yeah. What? And so, you know, it's all fine. So
it's not overtly gross or gory. No. And I mean, it's not a ton of violence.
But
it's just these weird, disturbing images.
There's plenty
tension.
To keep you awake at night thinking about that they might come for you.
I mean, we also have that. The special effects, is it dated enough so that kids seeing it today are just completely unimpressed with that? Because we see that when you look at things like the old Mummy, the Universal Monsters films, like your old Draculas and Frankensteins and Mummy films that terrified audiences in the 30s and 40s and would do nothing to a child when I was a kid. Mm. You know,
here's a preview for next week, though. Next week, when we talk about Dwayne Barry and Ascension from season 2, I am totally going to lay down the law and praise the special effects from here to Kingdom Come. That's my preview.
Oh, they're very good. I mean, it depends on what they're doing. I think there are some, as you go through the series, there are a few moments of computer generated things that look like they were computer generated in 1993 and that sort of thing. It's not that they're bad or that they were bad for the time. It's just that now they're dated.
Well, the computers themselves that show up, even in this episode, even in Ice, I mean, you're looking at them, you're like, is that a 386?
Oh, God, yeah. It's them. I think Scully uses a Mac with a black and white screen. It's great.
Is that an EGA monitor?
Yeah. But do you know what? This was like the first time you saw mobile phones used prominently on a television show. And then,
yeah, you know what they do, because a lot of the episodes that we've talked about, a lot of the series that we've talked about before this, the common statement has been, oh man, if they only had cell phones, this entire plot would disappear in a poof of smoke.
Yeah. Well, they did in the X-Files. They had cell phones. And a lot of the time they would take an easy way out of, oh, we're too far underground, or there's no signal here, or that kind of thing. Which I think you can get away with stuff set in America more easily than you can here. But they kind of did that sometimes, but yeah, you never saw mobile phones on TV.
It was right at the time where they had to start writing that into every show, wasn't it? You see that in a lot of horror movies too. It's the similar thing. Oh, we're too far away. Oh, there's interference. Oh, the UFO is blocking out the signal.
Yeah. No one's phone is ever fully charged. No one has an in-car charger. No one has a spare battery or battery pack with them. And there will never, ever be a signal.
Or there's the obligatory shot where the phone gets knocked to the ground and the monster steps on it.
Yeah.
All that kind of thing. There's lots of dramatic devices you can use. And they did do it a couple of times. But generally, they handle it quite well. It's just one of the things you see when you see Mulder's cell phone from season one. And it's huge. And yet I remember being so impressed by this guy that was Mulder at how sophisticated he was because he had a mobile phone.
Well, at the time, we were still watching Saved by the Bell, and we were like, oh, Zach Morris has a phone. And then Mulder comes along, and his is slightly smaller. Yeah. And we're like, wow, it's the future.
I was so jealous of Zach Morris and his mobile phone. I was so jealous of every American kid in every American film that had a phone in their bedroom. Was that just films? You didn't have a phone in your room when you were a kid?
I don't really know. I mean, honestly, I don't. I think that it was a more of a teenage girl thing. Teenage girls were expected or given more leverage to have phones in their bedrooms. I don't remember any of my friends, my male friends growing up, having phones in their bedroom.
Right.
The trope was very much that the girls would get together and talk to each other on their bed, kicking up their feet behind them as they laid on their stomachs late into the night, and dad would take away the phone when you did something wrong, right?
Yeah,
and if she was really spoiled, it'd be a pair of lips phone or a shoe phone. Yes. Real spoiled bitch had that.
Or as you got right into the 90s, it was the see-through transparent phone.
Yeah, they were ultra cool. But I
wonder what when it flashes, when it rings.
This is
what it's got the purple neon light going through it. Yeah. Sorry.
One huge difference between American households and British households when we were growing up watching you guys on TV was the length of the telephone cord.
Oh, you got to have it at least 30 feet.
Yeah.
So how are you going to make it to the fridge?
Yeah, we had like a 4-foot cord.
If that.
You were sat next to the telephone. That's where you made your call. And you could maybe like pick up the receiver, you know, if you had a big rotary dial, you could like lift up the back at the handle and walk around like you're a private detective. But you could still only do that in like a 1 square meter.
See, you guys are just doing it wrong. You have to totally Napoleon Dynamite it. You've got to have a cord that's long enough to stretch anywhere in the house and possibly outside to Tina the Llama.
I agree. Those were the days.
As well that you see on TV shows was the cord stretched all the way up into the teenage girl's bedroom. through the door.
No one ever asked where the phone was then, did they?
No.
It was always in the same place.
They didn't even ask where the remote was because they didn't exist either.
Oh, yes. Oh. So what else is there to say about ICE?
Well, really, I think that that's where we should draw it to a line. I have so much. You guys have no idea how much I have to say about the X-Files. I've been just bundled up all week trying to keep this energy inside. So excited to be back in X-Files land. So excited to be seeing Chris Carter's name flash up and that eye over the asphalt on the opening credits.
I wish I'd taken actual notes now, but I didn't. I have trouble taking notes about stuff when I'm enjoying it, watching it. You know, like I watched Moonraker this week for Shaken Not Stirred. I've got 5 solid pages of notes. There's a note for nearly every 2 minutes of the entire movie. More so in certain places because I hate that fucking movie. I hate every single frame of it. It's the worst James Bond film. It's not even a passable film in my book.
It does not deserve its reputation.
It deserves the reputation of utter crap from beginning to end. The plot makes no sense. It's just appalling. And so thousands of notes. Everything wrong with it. It's going to be quite an angry show, that. But this, I'm just into it. So I'm not writing anything down. And I've certainly got nothing bad to say about it. So no notes.
Allison, I just hope that you're along for the ride because next week we're going to do episode 2 of 15 on the X-Files.
Yeah, I'm good. I've seen it and most of the next one too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we've got to watch the end of that one.
Yeah.
We just ran out of time before it was time to do the show.
It turned out we didn't need to anyway, so we can focus on it a little bit more anyway. And we have nearly come to the end of 42, so we will be able to stack a few more.
Yeah, there's just one more of those
X-Files on there. Is there?
Yeah.
Well, are we going to mainline that straight away after this?
Of course, that's what we're doing next.
Thank goodness for that. Jonesing.
Of course, that's what we're doing.
Jonesing.
Okay, so I'm off here to do an Atomic Trivia War 9000. Is there anything else that we need to talk about or plug?
I've cleverly plugged all my other shows during this one.
You did manage to work those in very, very subtly. Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That was well done.
I was quite pleased with that. So Ray Guns and Go-Go Boots that I do with Rick about, we've actually got one to come out about, what was that show I watched, Alison? Space 1999. That was not fun. So we've got that one coming out and the other.
Look, I don't want to blow smoke up your ass, but Ray Guns and Go-Go Boots is a good show.
Thank you.
Well, it's those two in it, you know?
It's down to Rick.
I like both of you very much, but the problem going into it for me was the subject matter, because I was like, really? Lost in Space? I never liked that.
Neither did
I. I put it in and I'm all of a sudden, hey, I have a reason to care about listening to something about Lost in Space.
Because I agree with you, and it's not just a blowing smoke up ass of sci-fi programs.
No, it was awful, that program.
I know, I sat through it.
Yeah, wait till you hear what we say about Space 1999 as well. I'm enjoying Outer Limits, though, but I'm looking forward to the next Prisoner or something of that level. Because damn, I loved that one. That was so good. So that's what I'm doing these days.
Well, we've got a listener meetup in Leeds in England on the 18th of April. And we'll be meeting in the Queen Victoria pub on Great George Street.
There's details on our Facebook group. So you'll find a link to that on our website, simplysyndicated.com. And all our shows are on SoundCloud as well. That's another thing. So if you like SoundCloud, then you'll find them there.
Marvellous.
Okay, I think that is everything, isn't it? You've got a war to start, so...
Pew, pew, pew!
Right, bye-bye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.